just like to say a couple words about the theme that we've been focusing on this weekend and how we'll be focusing our worship this morning. Love thy neighborhood. What are we talking about? Well, specifically this morning, we're going to be focusing on the North Parkview neighborhood where our Parkview Mennonite Church building resides geographically. Why that focus? Because we live a lot of different places. I think number one is that we need to recognize that as a church, we have historically and are continuing to choose to be, to inhabit that neighborhood, that particular neighborhood. And as a worshiping body, we want to think collectively about what it means to live there in that space and who our neighbors are. And so our practice this morning is going to be to explore that more deeply. And we want to do that collectively as a church because that is all of our neighborhood. While we're doing that, we're going to be learning some practices and skills that perhaps, and sensitivities that you can take back to your own personal neighborhood where you live as a family or a household and explore your own neighborhood where you reside. So I hope that we all can enter into this no matter where you live and see it as an important exercise for us to be engaging in as a congregation. But also in the back of your mind, as we're doing this, be thinking about the neighborhood where you reside and how you can learn to love your household's neighborhood as well. But the question before us this morning is how, as a church, we can love our neighborhood. And we've invited Andrew and Karen Suderman to be a resource for us this weekend. They were with us in this room for 2 hours yesterday morning and led us, many of us who were here, in some exercises of thinking about the Good Samaritan parable and how we might rewrite that for our location and neighborhood. We'll be looking at some more things this morning. But Andrew and Karen have been great to have among us. They've spent the whole weekend with us, not just those 2 hours in session yesterday, but they've ate and camped and sat around the fireside with us, and we've learned to know them and their three children that they have with us. So we're glad to have them here. I'm going to invite them to come up now and further introduce themselves and then engage in this time together. But I think the first thing I'll place in scripture. So, Karen?
I'm reading this morning from Luke chapter 14, verses 1 through 23. Now, it happened as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him closely. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus answering spoke to the lawyers of the Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" But they kept silent. And he took him and healed him and let him go. And then he answered them, saying, "Which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day?" And they could not answer him regarding these things. So he told a parable to those who were invited, when he noted how they chose the best places, saying to them, "When you are invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, 'Give place to this man,' and then you begin with shame to take the lower place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, go sit up.' Then you will have the glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be abused, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Then he said to him who invited him, "When you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends or brothers or relatives or your rich neighbors, lest they invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid in the resurrection of the just." Now, when one of those who sat at the table with him heard these things, blessed is he who shall eat the bread in the kingdom of God. Then he said to him, a certain man gave a great supper and invited many. And he sent his servant at supper time to say to those who were invited, come, for all things are ready. But they all, with one accord, began to make excuses. The first said to him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must go see it. I ask you have to give me an excuse. And the third said, another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm going to test them. I ask you have me excused. Still another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So that servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city and bring in there the poor and the maimed and the lame and the blind. And the servant said, master, it is done as you commanded, and there is still room. Then the master said to the servant, go out into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in that my house may be filled. For I say to you that none of those men who were invited shall taste my supper.
More of you this morning with the logistics. You made this a bit frightening now. And there are some familiar faces, some people who were in my classes before. Now I'm really scared because they too are going to. Oh man, this is not. As long as you didn't bring the tomatoes and stuff to throw, that's all I have. Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you, continue to be with you this morning. It's been a very enjoyable weekend, and it's been a lot of fun to be around you, spend time with you, talk to you, listen to you, eat with you, pray, enjoy the fires and the s'mores, and in general, just to scope you out, too. It's been fun to do that, to investigate you. We want to just, first and foremost, thank you very much for the invitation to be with you this morning and this weekend. It's a very special gift that we have received to be with you and to wrestle with difficult questions that I think we all have to wrestle with. And so we are very thankful and grateful that we had this opportunity. As was said, Karen and I and our 3 kids have been here. I'm struggling to think how much of an introduction to make, because I made the introduction yesterday, but at the same time, many of you, you can ask your neighbors. How's that, eh? You're tying into the theme. We want to recap a little bit, and we want to continue the process of investigating and exploring what it means to love your neighbor, and by extension, what it means to love your neighborhood. This is something that we began yesterday. We've already started to look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, and we read it, and reread it, and reread it, and then began to dig into it. What characters do we relate to? What characters do we find interesting, problematic? Who are we in the story? And so we started to look at some of this. We actually even began to rewrite the story, and in order to kind of see what this story would look like within the Parkview area. How would we understand the parable of the Good Samaritan within Parkview, Harrisonburg, Virginia, United States? And there were some very interesting stories that that emerged from our attempts to rewrite it. There's, at the end of yesterday, this whole weekend has been we've tried to make it more of an interactive time. A time where Karen and I don't do a whole lot of talking, but rather we go through a process of trying to think and trying to think through what it might mean for you as Parkview Mennonite Church to be and live into your calling as a church faithfully where you are within your context. Right? And so we started to do that yesterday, and at the end of the day, we ended with exploring what are some activities based on the Good Samaritan and what we can see within that parable. What are ways in which we can love our neighbor as the Samaritan loved the person who was lying on the ditch? And so we ended that yesterday, and we started to write a few ideas on the walls here. And I'm wondering if those of you who are nearest to those things, can you just pop up and read a couple of them, just to kind of give everybody an idea as to what are some ideas that have arisen thus far? What are some things that's written on that sheet?
Kids club enlarge the hospitality to the parents.
Aha! Did everybody hear that? Kids club enlarged to hospitality to the parents as well, to include the parents. Okay, what else?
And walking into the neighborhood, removing barriers to seeing and interacting with our neighbors.
Interesting. What about some of that? What about that one on, over there? Can somebody pop up and read a few of them?
Don't be shy. So those of you over there, I'm going to ask the same thing, so you can already start to look at each other. All right, in a nice loud voice.
Know our nearby neighbors' names and stories.
Know our neighbors' names and stories. What else?
Front porch offered by PBMC.
Front porch.
Offered by PBMC.
Explain that to me. Aha, wonderful. Okay, good. What else?
BMU students as our neighbors? That's a question.
I think BMU students have to say, well, that. We could just as easily flip that question around, I suspect. Then? Okay, keep going.
Culturally sensitive to our neighbors' needs.
Aha. So cultural sensitivity, very good. Over there?
Push public policy in a direction that can help with healthcare affordability, homelessness, etc.
Push public policy in order to incorporate the expenses and the requirements of health and homelessness and those type of things? Okay, good.
Provide student housing.
Student housing, provide student housing. Sounds like the capital campaign, very nice, okay.
And be a sanctuary church.
Be a sanctuary church. That would be possible. You might even want to extend that. Once Hartley becomes a sanctuary church, we might want to extend that as well. That's an interesting idea. Very good. There's one more sheet over there. Is anything written on it? I can't see it. What's written on that one?
Step away from near and towards the other.
Step away from fear and towards the other. Nice. What else?
Walk your neighborhood.
Walk your neighborhood?
Yes.
Okay.
Making time to be interruptible.
Make your time interruptible. Make time a little less, shall we say, North American? I'm saying that as somebody who has lived in Latin America for 10 years and South Africa for 7 years. So I don't know if that gives me a right to say it, but it gives me some right to jab North Americans. Keep going.
Don't let offense stop hospitality and go beyond the kids' club, meet the adults.
So again, move. Kids Club, it sounds like it's a good beginning, but how can we move beyond that? Interesting. Very good. So this is some of the work that we started to do yesterday. What does it look like for Parkview Mennonite Church to be, not only just to be a good neighbor, but in fact to love my neighborhood, right? And so you can thank your friends around you for some of that great work. Now, yesterday I also gave a bit of a warning about neighborhood logic. Karen and I, we lived in South Africa for 7 years. And for those of you who know some of South Africa, and I'm going to share a little bit, share a few reflections about South Africa in a bit as well. And for my students, I'm sorry it comes up all the time. So forgive me. In South Africa, the logic of neighborhood, of being neighbors, was precisely part of the logic that also helped to maintain the logic of apartheid itself. In other words, the logic of set of racial segregation within South Africa was described often and tried to be justified through the lens of being good neighbors. There was one, Hendrik Verwoerd, who was one of the architects of apartheid back in the 50s, talked about, he said, this word apartheid, it's such a wrong misnomer, it's such a misnomer of what we are trying to do. I'd rather call it a policy of good neighborliness. It was an attempt, according to him, to, yes, we can help the neighbor, but we have to ensure that we're going to be separate. We have to know who is where and who belongs where. And when we know that, then we can act as good neighbors do. And so we have to be careful, we have to be cautious, we have to be aware of how our logic, or what kind of logic we're going to assume when we talk about neighbors and neighborliness, right? Are we talking about and trying to maintain distance from us and them, right? And then trying to find ways in which to help them? Or do we see the neighbor as, in fact, one of us? There's a theologian by the name of George Reger who depicts three different kinds. I have one student in my class who, we just talked about this last week, so he must follow. He depicts three different types of mission that churches have often utilized. One, mission as outreach, right? Going out to the other in order to help them, in order to meet their needs, in order to serve them, etc. Right? Not a bad thing to do, to be sure. But one of the things that we have to be careful of is that assumption, he notes, that assumption already, it maintains the power within the person who is in fact going out and serving the other. Right? What's more is that it often assumes that we know what the other wants. And so we go out to serve them thinking that we know what they need, what they want, etc. Meanwhile, maintaining the power within ourselves in order to do that. Right? Like, for example, he mentioned the example of teach a person to fish. You know this adage, right? Teach a person to fish instead of, no, give a person a fish, they're fed for a day. Teach a person to fish, they're fed for a lifetime. What a wonderful adage, isn't it? But he notes that there's a couple of things that are challenging about that. One, we already presume that the other likes fish. But they don't. Second, who has access to the pond in which we can fish? Our serving the other hasn't changed the dynamics of power that exist between them. The second type that he mentions is this opportunity to build relationships. Again, not a bad thing to do, right? Building relationships. How much better of an idea can we get? We want to get to know the other. That is fantastic. But oftentimes, he warns, oftentimes when we do that, we go with the desire to make us feel better about who we are and what we are called to do. In other words, we go to build relationships because it's going to make us feel good. Because we are going to benefit from the warm and fuzzies that it creates. Right? And so building relationships isn't a bad thing. But once again, he warns, the question of power still resides in who has it and who doesn't when you do that. And so the third thing that he ultimately advocates for is what he describes as inreach. And he describes as inreach not in a way to as a self-serving thing, but he describes it as going to the other with the desire, with the utmost hope to learn what God or who God is in that other person that can ultimately change who we are. We get converted through the relationship with the other. We open ourselves to a relationship of vulnerability in order that we may also be changed. Now, we can't do this without relationship, we can't do this without being healthy. So he's not wiping those things out completely. understand the relationship of power between those relationships? And are we ultimately willing to be changed by our interaction with the other? And so when we relate to others, these are some of the questions that I hope that we can wrestle with. And this morning, we're going to spend some time, and we're going to actually, we're also going to kind of break up into small groups. And so we are going to move these seats around, and we're going to change things around so that you can talk amongst yourself to explore what this would look like within the Park City area.
Okay.
We're going to spend some time going through kind of a mental exercise first of
Both.
Okay. You pick one. Walking through the neighborhood of Park. Okay? In your bulletins, you have maps. And so we're going to figuratively walk through your neighborhood in order to explore some of these questions.
Okay?
And in that process, Karen will lead that process. After that, then we're going to come back and we're going to start asking questions about how do we engage or how do we relate to some of these different parts of the neighborhood. And here, this is going back now to our South African experience. Here, one of the things that I think that's important for us to pay attention to is the notion of the space. What kind of space has been created? What kind of space do we want to create? And I ask those questions because space itself carries meaning. Space itself is a political thing, believe it or not. It already shapes and determines how we're going to relate to one another. Right? So within the South African context, in 1948, the National Party came into power. For those of you who heard me last year, you've heard a bit of this, so you can tune out for the next 2 minutes. That's fine. But in 1948, the National Party came into power in South Africa. Bless you. And introduced legally the system of apartheid, the political laws and regulations that became known as the apartheid system. That was in 1948. Now, what they were doing was nothing new. The logic of apartheid, the logic of separateness and racial segregation had been in place since 1652, right? So they weren't introducing anything necessarily new. What was new is they were putting it into law, right? And so then all of a sudden, in 1948 and then onwards, through the system of apartheid, the law determined who could be where and when and etc. And so here, for example, so beaches, for example, were segregated, right? Whites could go to one particular beach, blacks have to go to a different beach, right? Where you, the logic, watch the danger sign on the next one. The logic was when you leave a whites-only area, you were entering into a dangerous place. Right? The way space was created and determined already identified where danger was and where it was. In order to justify and make sure that the law of segregation could be created, they had to forcibly remove people from areas where they were going to say, this is only going to be a whites-only area. And so you had a whole army that came to different places, packed up people's goods in a truck, and shipped them off to the edges of the city, into the township, in order to create the racial segregation that South Africa was found in. Next slide. In 1913, this is a map of the 1913 Land Act, where whites, who comprised maybe 15%, maybe 20% of the total population in South Africa, they created a law whereby they took 80% of the land for themselves, leaving 80% of the population with only 20% of the land. And the land that they were left with wasn't the best land there was. It definitely didn't have all the gold and diamonds and so on and so forth. Right? And so just by the creation of this law, it already determined who was going to benefit and who was not. Right?
Next one.
Within the cities, every city and town itself was structured in a particular way. The white suburb, the whites-only area, was in the middle of the city. Everybody who was described or identified as quote-unquote non-white, and there even notice how the way in which those concepts are used already determine who matters and who doesn't within the South African context, right? Those who were described as quote-unquote non-white were pushed to the edges and were made to live in townships. And so you had the whites-only area where the CBD, the Central Business District, was and would be found. You had a buffer zone around that, usually with factories and places where people could work, right? And then you had the townships outside of that. And so you wanted to make sure that people who were quote-unquote non-white lived close enough that they could work in the factories, but they didn't have to come into the white zone. Every town and city was constructed according to this logic. And so based on this logic, what was the apartheid system creating? Well, look where meaning was found, theoretically. Look who counted. Look who didn't count. Look who mattered. And look who didn't matter. The way space is constructed determines meaning. And so when we think about our particular neighborhood, Parkview also came and has a history. I don't know all of it, but it has a history, right? Parkview is part of Harrisonburg. What does that look like? What does that mean, right? Within Parkview, how are things constructed? Now there's opportunity too to be used, right, in dismantling some of the violent, unfortunate parts of that, in recreating new forms of space. Right? There's opportunity within that. Now here are just a couple of slides just to show the ways in which this space was policed and enforced. Everybody who was described as quote unquote not white needed to have a passport in order to belong somewhere where they theoretically weren't supposed to belong. They needed permission to be in the white zone area. The next slide shows the passport. And if you dared to go against this, the results were severe. This is 1961 Sharpeville. 69 people were killed because they dared to march to a police station without their passports. Space matters. Space carries meaning. And so today, this morning, as we begin to break out and think, both individually but also as a group, we encourage you to think about space in light of power dynamics, in light of the politics that are inherent in space, and how do we confront some of that, while at the same time, how do we create new forms of meaning, new forms of space within that? How do we create something different where some different meaning is found? So this is what we're going to do this morning. So I'm going to pass it off to Karen, who's going to lead us through a meditative walk through the Parkview neighborhood. If you have your map in your bulletin, we would encourage you to take it out. Take a look at your neighborhood. Take a look at the neighborhood of Parkview. And let's begin to explore and think and see what in fact we see within this neighborhood. Okay? And if you want, even put your finger on it as we go through it. Put your finger on the map and see. So, I'll stop.
Right, so we have a good practice with this, and love children's times for these things because they often get us thinking meaningfully about what is continuing to happen for the worship service. So Pastor Mariah had this in our homes a little bit. We were in our bedrooms and kitchens and family rooms, backyards and beyond. Now we're going to tie our metaphorical shoes and we're going to go for a bit of a broader walk. You can see six zones delineated throughout the Parkview community. And we're going to take a walk through each one of those places. And as we walk, I'm going to ask a series of questions. And they're going to be the same questions as we said, as we learned yesterday, was encouraged that repetition can be a good thing. So let's sit back, and you can look at this map. You can use the map in front of you. Make sure your shoes are tied. And we're going to go for this walk. We're going to start, surprise, in zone, in the first zone, described as a multi-ethnic, multilingual, many-low-income apartments. So let's walk through this neighborhood, for this section of the neighborhood. What do you see?
Thank you.
Do you think others feel more comfortable? Do you know anyone? And do they know you? What are their struggles? You walk along the ridge of the hill a little bit, probably hang down. It'll be easier walking now. Because your shoes are still that tight. Who's here? And what do you see? What do you hear? Who's there and who isn't? What is there? And what isn't? Do you feel welcome? Do others feel welcome? Do you know them? And do they know you? What are their struggles? Who is there and who isn't? What is there and what isn't? Do you feel welcome? Do you think others are welcomed? Square. Maybe we're hot, we'll stop at Dairy Queen. There's some milk in the line. What do you see here? What do you hear? Who is here? And who isn't? What is here? What isn't. Do you feel welcome in this space? Are others welcome in this space? Do you know that and do they know you? What are their struggles?
You're wondering.
Must be fun. louder than she does. We're going to spend the rest of the time in smaller groups. I would invite you to break up into groups of 8 or 10, if you can. Switch the chairs around. If you need help, just give me a shout and we'll help you switch chairs around. And create little groups in order to explore some questions about what you just saw through your walk of Parkview. When the groups are formed, we're gonna hand out and give different post-it notes. And in your group, we want you to reflect on 3 basic questions.
Okay?
And we'll say the questions when we get together and when we'll tell you the questions when we're together. I'll tell you the first one though, just so you can start thinking of it as we start to rearrange. What can you learn? What can we learn from the person in that particular part of the neighborhood? So think of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What can we learn from that person? Okay, that's the first question. And we're going to encourage you to write that onto the blue post-it note. Okay? And as you think of things that we can learn, we're going to have a map. We're going to have this map on the bottom left here, where people can come up and post it on that section. Okay? What can we learn from you? This is what we can learn. And we're going to post it there. Okay? And then we're going to go through 2 other questions written on different colored post-it notes. And we're also going to post it on that map. Okay? And hopefully this will lead us, and this will give us an opportunity to think a little bit more as to how we engage, or how we are engaging, with the others in those different areas within the parking lot. Okay? So let's split up into groups of 8 to 10. If we can figure out how we can do this.
May God bless you with discomfort. But easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may live deep within your heart.
May God bless you with anger, injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that you may work for God's justice, God's freedom, and God's peace.
May God bless you with tears, to shed for those who suffer in pain, rejection, starvation, and war, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and turn their pain into joy.
And may God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in this world, so that you can do what others claim cannot be done.
And the blessing of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit be upon you, those you love, and those for whom you pray, this day and forevermore.